David A. Price presents...
Hello, folks. Welcome to Marvel Noise, episode 448. We're your hosts, the Marvel Noise Wrecking Crew. I'm Steve Wrecker, carrying Asgardian enchantment wherever I go. And with me is Andrew, the LA Bulldozer, and pile driver Kevin. Let's wreck this place, guys.
Oh, I got
guys.
Pile driver.
You didn't want to be Thunderbolt.
I'll take Bulldozer. He's pretty good.
Marvel Noise in our 19th year. Remains a podcast proudly sponsored by nobody. You can find, listen to, and download episodes on marvelnoise.com and get new episode announcements on our social media pages. Special thanks, as always, to Lord Chaos and Master Order, all wrapped into one, otherwise known as Derek Coward, who created this show with David A. Price and is our fifth Beatle for sure. He hosts the show on his Deliberate Noise Network, which is where you can also find Indie Comic Book Noise, our sister show, where we talk indie. Now, we've got a fair amount of recent reads building up, and the dam's about to burst, so let's make some noise and release that pressure. Sound good?
Gee, Steve, now, am I going to need to take a bathroom break after this?
You did the Pavlovian preset on you.
Talk about releasing pressure and everything.
All right, I got one that'll tighten your sphincter then. It is a one-shot, Alien Romulus, a true recent read.
Oh, I didn't think there would be Star Trek and Aliens crossover. Wow, that's something.
Written by Zach Thompson, with art by Daniel Picadio, with a foreword by director Fede Alvarez. It's a special prequel to the Alien Romulus film. Now, this one-shot takes place 20 years after the first Alien movie, and a crew is exploring the wreckage of the blown-up Nostromo. And, of course, you know what they find. Or what finds them, right?
Oh, they were that stupid, were they?
Strong ties to the whole Wayland mythology and continuity and everything, and being tied in with the first movie and stuff.
I mean, the characters are stupid, not the creators, just, you know.
Yeah, I don't know the creators. It's continuing the tradition of current Marvel Comics, where I barely know any of the creators anymore. I don't even know why we say the creators, because most of the time it's like, oh, that's him. Oh, he's on that book. I kid.
My hunger for gigantic events has waned quite a bit, but I decided to grab One World Under Doom number one.
Well, usually you go all in. So
I did. I did not go all in. I don't. It's pretty recent. Where are we on spoilers and stuff? I mean, this is like the big book, but Dr. Doom takes over the world. I mean, I guess that's clear from the jump.
That's what he's been after all this time? Take. It is.
Yeah. I mean, they've never had it where he takes over everything.
You well, mean he wins?
Emperor Doom happened.
I mean, you know, there's never been Emperor Doom.
Right? Yeah, Secret Wars.
Endless stories where he, you know, where he takes over everything, but... It's always what are we going to let Norman Osborn take over everything again?
You know? There was that crossover supervillain team up and champions back in the 70s where he took over everybody. They got the Burn Austin cover with everyone bowing down to Doom on the cover.
Like, I know you alluded to that you don't like the rest of Doom 29, but that was a pretty sweet takeover.
True. Yeah, that part was cool. Yeah, no, I was going to say, when the taking over of America part was cool, but then it just went nowhere. The whole rest of the line fell apart around it, and it was like, reached that pinnacle for what? But that's not going to happen this time to do Amazing Adventure.
This time it's going to work out perfect, but it's fun. Baron Zemo shows up for a hot second, Kevin.
Whoa, what?
So you'll be pleased, because when Doom takes over everything and he's like, you want to know what? I'm going to get rid of war and give everybody, you know, education, healthcare, everything they want. And Hydra's like, nuts to you. And they attack. And then minutes later, Doom's like, yes, they're working with me. And so meanwhile, you know, the Avengers and Fantastic Four and Spider-Man and everyone's like, we can't let Doom take over everything.
I thought they were going to say, we can't let everyone get education and healthcare. Yeah. And all these things, these are bad things we have to stomp out.
That's the subtext that I think is pretty obviously you're going to read into it. But I do like, it's a Ryan North book, so Dr. Doom creates a Dr. Doom dinosaur that he rides around.
Oh, yeah, that was from the earlier issues in the Fantastic Four series.
That's a team-up, not a creation.
Oh, so now that's his... that's his buddy for some of the adventure. Yeah. He rides him like a little, and he has the, cause he's the Sorcerer Supreme. I guess you get the Cloak of Levitation. Just, you know, I felt like maybe the cloak should have a little more loyalty to the old man. Like, but they wanted to give him, I get the eye for sure. But the cloak, I was like, can he get a different Cloak of Levitation?
How else do you know that he's the, you know, the Sorcerer Supreme? You got to give him the
cloak. The Eye of Agamotto.
When,
besides, as you remember from that, the Cloak of Levitation used to be blue, Steve.
I thought well, that maybe was
you can make it green.
I thought he got the other
coloring days.
I thought he got the other cloak when he became Sorcerer Supreme. No,
I don't think so. I think they just had a coloring goof, but maybe that is.
All right.
But hey, it's better than calling Spider-Man Superman, so.
Oh, jeez.
But anyway, so Doom is always one step ahead of them. So it's going to be they try and do something, they counter, and he has the counter to it. And so Doom ends up saving people. So now he's going to appear to be the hero. It was fine. I think I might need to sit on it, because I have one other World Under Doom tie-in, and I think I just maybe need to be in the right frame of mind for it, because I also have the Thunderbolts one.
No.
The one World Under Doom Thunderbolt, because, you know, I mean, it's a Thunderbolts comic, but those are the only two I got, so I was like, let's see how that goes. But that one is, you got that one, I mean, do you care if I...
Sure.
I don't know how much of that I can spoil either, but plug your ears if you don't want a big spoiler. My big problem with that is it's the, you know, Kelly Lansing team who did the most recent Thunderbolts, which is fine. It's the Bucky-led, but the team is kind of broken apart, and Bucky's the one that isn't going to have any dealings with Doom. And Doom tries to keep recruiting him, and he keeps pulling the rug out from under him. Because Doom's a lot smarter than Bucky. I mean, no offense to him, but he's always going to get the edge on him. But I think where they lost me is Doom puts all the nukes up in space. And so Bucky recruits Songbird to get him up there, which is nice. Although she has that dumb, like, shave side of the head thing that I thought we got rid of in the 90s. I guess Kevin likes that haircut.
Yeah, what's wrong with that haircut?
I don't know. I feel like it's kind of dated, and she should have kept up with the times.
Like, but the costumes they have that were revamped after the 90s, those are some bad costumes. You might as well just go back to the 90s.
Well, I mean, I like the outfit. It's just the haircut. But anyways, she gets them up there, and Doom is like, oh, you fool. He's not able to defuse the bombs. Doom actually launches a nuke. And so you get the callback of Bucky on the rocket.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to defuse it. And it even literally flashes back to the panels from, you know, not the actual panels, but recreations of that.
No, they have to hit you over the head with it. And if you didn't realize it.
Yeah. And they're on the comms like, you can't do it, Bucky. Bail out, please. Because the widow, you know, they're having a romance. And so he does bail out. So they end up nuking Shelbyville, Indiana, and kill like 20. And I'm just like, I'm not in the mood for this. Is the type of like overstretch where I'm like, how far is the Marvel universe from us? It just seems like such an overkill to nuke a whole city. And like, this isn't the Ultimate Universe where you just destroy everything. How is that going to get wound into, I don't know. Again, I think I need maybe, to reset my brain.
Maybe Doom will be a hero and make it all go away and show that Doctor Strange could have made all the bad things in the world go away when he was Sorcerer Supreme too, but he didn't. Because he didn't love you as much as Doom does.
Yeah. So they're using footage that shows that, making it look like Bucky's the one that dropped the nuke on the town. Yeah. Which I get setting him up, but I'm like, we really needed to kill an entire... Like, some smaller transgression that isn't so... That's my problem, is the scope of this. They could have easily had him set up some failed attack or whatever, like, oh, the nuke, and it was a dud or whatever, and then he's still a terrorist and everyone still wants to get him. But now I feel like that's something that, like, how do we ever walk that back? I mean, just forget it happened, like Robo Dugan or whatever.
I guess you didn't like that Kurt Busiek Kang War story where Washington, D.C. was basically wiped out. I think Brubaker, didn't he wipe out like Philadelphia or something?
I'm not super big on that in the main 616 because then I'm like, well, then it completely changes. Like, nothing's ever going to be the same. Like, it's bad enough that the country doesn't really mirror the U.S. that much, but that would really make it unrecognizable. I mean, why, unless you want to go so over the top, like the Molecule Man or something where everything's like the whole world has disappeared, but you know it's going to be back. But this seemed weirdly calculated to just be the right amount of destruction to.
Did you say it was Shelbyville?
Yeah, his home. I guess that's where he's from. Or...
Isn't that the rival town to the Simpsons Springfield, which is everywhere and nowhere at the same time?
Because, so I just...
That's pretty funny.
So that part was the one where I was like, I don't know. And like I said, it's probably just where my head's at. And I'm sure any other day I'd be laughing about it, but...
No, I don't know. It seems a little like the hero's
just overkill for the thing.
Yeah.
Not that thing.
I once knew a girl from Shelbyville.
But yeah, I mean, you know, if that's the sort of high stakes you want, I just feel like it's kind of cheap too. Like, we're going to just blow up a whole city instead of have something clever. But I don't know. I'll just put these down, and maybe by the time the second one comes out, I'll sort of revisit and get in the headspace where they're just going to destroy everything, and then we'll just magically set it back to the status quo.
Just to piggyback on you, because it's the prequel issue right before that issue, is I read FF28, that's Ryan North and Stephen Cummings and Wayne Foucher, and it has Doom having sealed himself off in Latveria magically, and Reed is trying to scientifically figure out a way to breach the magical boundaries, and Sue comes up with the idea of recruiting Dane Whitman because he's both a man of scientist, being a physicist and a pilot and everything, and also you know, he's got a magic sword and everything. He's the Black Knight, right? So they go and they see Dane Whitman, and he's like, I can help you guys, but I don't have my sword anymore. I absorbed the sword because it's like a cursed sword and everything, and it's always getting into the wrong hands. So I'm like, it's one with me now. And he takes them back to World War I times, and they have this adventure where they find the mystic sword that they're looking for and bury it, so that they can recover it in present time. And when they do, the Dane Whitman laughs, ha, 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 and it's really Doom in disguise, having played them for a fool so that he could get this magic sword. And then he goes back in his magic shell and locks the door.
Huh.
And then Sue and Reed appear back in New York City, and everything's like all Doom, like in Times Square, leading into the issue that Andrew just talked about.
Did the lemon tree survive, though?
Oops, there goes another.
In this issue, he doesn't seem to have a big magic sword that he does anything.
Well, it was the sword that could possibly defeat him and break into his magical barrier.
Okay.
So he just wants it so that no one else can have it, not necessarily to wield it, I think.
Okay. But now he just revealed what his weakness is. That's like, oh, well, I don't want this volcano thing getting out, so I'll, like, kill this volcanologist. And then they find out that, oh...
To Ryan North's credit, though, there was a cleverness to needing Sue's power to reveal where it was. So, like, it was a one step ahead of kind of a thing, like Andrew was saying before.
Yeah.
That like, when it happened, it was when he revealed that he had gone, like, all Saruman on them and was really tainted by Doom, it all made sense, even though you didn't see it coming until then. But it was good. Enough.
Well, I guess this is going to be an all Doom hour, because I have a Doctor Doom issue.
All right. Lay it on us.
So I have Doctor Doom and Rocket Raccoon.
Ooh, I read this too.
So you said you don't know these creators, so I'm going to have to explain to you. There is a sci-fi author that came up with this show. It wasn't Star Trek. It was called Babylon 5. And the writer is J. Michael Straczynski, sometimes called JMS. You know this guy, Steve?
Yeah, I know him. And Gary Frank did the cover, too. And it's very recognizably Gary Frank when you look at it.
You know, and this is by Will Robson, too. But the thing is, you know, sometimes you judge people by how they draw their Doctor Doom?
Yeah.
And the one thing I have an issue with is the way he draws Doom's mask around his mouth. It looks like he has certain type of mustache.
Yeah. It's weird.
Which is kind of distracting.
It's weird, and it changes, and it's big, and it's bulky, and it's weird. But this one, I do like that this is like the first in a series of one-shots that just feature weird pairings.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, give me a weird pairing. Boom, Doom and Rocket Raccoon.
Yeah, it's fun. I think Rocket Raccoon looks more classical than Guardians in here, too.
Yeah.
But yeah, Rocket's showing up at Doom's castle here and then eating a lot of food before he's going to... do all this business with Doom, all this sciencing, right?
Yeah, Doom summons him to help fix his time machine to be able to go past the beginning of the Big Bang to what was happened before, so he could figure out, like, basically, so he could figure out why bad things happen to good people. In a nutshell. But yeah. The bonding time is great because it takes like 2 weeks for them to like figure it out and make it so. And all of the back and forth between them, the amount of Rocket Raccoon that Doom is willing to tolerate because he wants what he wants from Rocket Raccoon is pretty funny. So you know that he's just, you know, accepting the way that Rocket is to get what he wants. But it's funny to see him have to do so. And then he pets Rocket. That's funny, too.
So, yeah, since there are one-shots, I definitely ordered another one of these. You know, just selecting the ones that most interested me. And if I hear good things, maybe I'll pick up another one, too.
Yeah, this one was good. All right, another one that I thought was pretty good was Immortal Thor number 20. We talked about this book, the first chunk of issues of this book. It's still written by Al Ewing with art by Juan Basil Dua with Alex Ross covers. And the reason I bring it up again is because we're at issue 20 with the potentially milestone 25 issue coming up. And it seems like all this Utgard Asgardian stuff is reaching a boiling point because Utgard Thor is sacrificed by the other Utgard beings and like sent to the doorstep of Asgard as a message. So Thor basically goes gulp and begins a quest to meet this seemingly unstoppable threat head on. But it's big and powerful. Very Kirby-ish without being derivative.
I'm into that. I stole another page from Andrew's book.
Ah, what's that?
We're going to talk about DC Comics?
Wow. What if Mickey and friends became the Fantastic Four?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I've got every one of these so far. Yeah, I got that one.
You got that one? What do you think of this one? I think it continues the tradition.
Yeah, I thought this one, partly because they really tried to hew close to the first book.
Yeah.
So that doesn't necessarily suit it super great for this one. I thought that's what I liked the Miss Marvel one. It picked kind of a goofy comic. I think those are the best when it's not goofy like the character, but you know what I mean? Like a sillier book, I think is kind of fun because the juxtaposition of the character put in whatever the melodramatic atmosphere makes it kind of what I like about it, as opposed to this one where it's, boy, I'm going to catch a lot of heat. But Fantastic Four, one, not my favorite comic of all time. I don't know. I just feel like it's somewhat disjointed. Also feels, I mean, I know it's different, but it has that Challengers of the Unknown vibe and everything. And
oh, yeah.
I don't know. It doesn't hook me the way that I think a few issues in the Fantastic Four for me picks up better after those first few issues, to my liking.
Would people really disagree about that? Like, I feel like they're figuring it out and everything.
I don't know. It's considered like the big key book of Marvel or whatever. So yeah. I always feel like I have to be careful and cagey, but I feel like it's a little more all over the place. I do like Mole Man, not going to lie. But I just feel like they pick up momentum a little bit when they can get past some of the mechanics of who they were, what happened to them, and now they have their powers bit.
But it's cool that in that first issue, they do more than just end it with them being the team. And in that way, it is a great transition book from the monster anthology books to what would become a superhero line, because that book feels like, not just because it's got the big Mole Man monster in it and on the cover, but also because it feels like a chaptered anthology book in a way. You got the whole science fiction, them going to space bit and coming back and getting the powers bit. Then you've got the whole them going on this whole adventure with the Mole Man and all that bit all under one roof. And that's, at least you get that kind of pacing all in the one issue. But because of that, you feel like you got two different stories.
Yeah, yeah, that's for sure.
And I feel that because that there's a lot, it's hard for them to reflect some of that. In like, obviously, Donald is the thing makes sense. But Goofy is the torch. And we don't get a lot of him being traditionally Goofy or the, like, he's more, that one's played kind of straight because they just don't have the real estate to spin it off all the way. But, I don't dislike it. And I do like that they continue the Mickey Mouse rule where you always see both ears no matter what position it's in. Which is always fun with the, like, that's a fun gimmick of the character that makes it fun in comic book form as Reed Richards. I guess we should say he's Reed. Obviously, Minnie is Sue. Obviously, Donald is the thing. But that left Goofy as the Human Torch, which I don't know.
Funny.
But I guess it worked for Kevin. But I was like,
I mean, yeah. I would say, like, I'm like, who are they going to have for the Human Torch? And I'm like, oh, I can buy that. Yeah. Johnny's always goofing off.
Saul Brodsky. It's going to be Saul Brodsky. Sorry, Roy. I don't care what you had in your script, Roy.
They throw those sketches in at the back of the issue too.
And I do put, like, yeah, I'll keep, you know, this series. The next one is the Avengers one. I will continue to be picking them up until such a point that I feel that they're not, like I said, I think this one just had to do with, it's a lot that goes on in that first issue that they're parodying. So maybe this, the ones that are a little bit different will be, will play better. I don't know. We'll see. We'll see when Avengers comes out.
Yeah. Would you have rather, like, it says Avengers, but I feel like Avengers, like there's Avengers number one or there's Avengers number four.
Yeah.
Those are different things.
They are. And I think it's going to be, I mean, they're already stretched to find roles for people. So I think they're going to.
Was there an Avengers one. 2 and 3? You know, like no, who, no one ever thinks of 2 and 3.
A circus?
I mean, the plus side is early Marvel Comics and the Disney Squad. Not a lot of women, so they don't need to worry about the ratios off on those. I would like to see more, like I said, the Miss Marvel, more of the weirder kind of fun, offbeat looks set in different eras to see, to give the creative team a lot of room to play against those things and not have to stuff in 100 characters and everything. And
well, maybe they should do a Son of Satan.
Oh, that'd be fun. Like any of those goofy ones would be fun to drop them in. But I don't know. I just, those older books, you know, they really are compressed in a fun way. But if you're trying to mimic it, or maybe don't worry about mimicking it so much. Like,
yeah,
take more freedom away from it at times. I don't know. Maybe they're like, no, we got to stick to this formula. But yeah.
They're like, we got to make Mickey Moon Knight. How is this going to work? This is going to be some gritty stuff here.
Well, I would think they got fun with like the Defenders. What they really should do is finish it with the Howard the Duck, considering all the back and forth about Donald versus Howard. And
wow.
Donald versus Howard, like it's Superman versus Spider-Man.
Well, I was thinking more like it's Captain Marvel versus Superman lawsuit-wise.
But, for sure.
Yeah. But now they own both characters. I wonder if they could, you know, if they have the right attitude, they could really have a lot of fun about that in the law. Like, I don't know. Maybe it'd be in bad taste or whatever. I don't know. But
when DC got the Fawcett characters, they did a big Treasury Superman versus Shazam.
Yeah. Like, that would, it seems to be, I don't know. It'd just be funny given the history of those characters that would be a cool way to end this whole thing.
Like, I want
to
see the Disney characters as the Marvel family, the Big Red Cheese and Mary Marvel. And
that might get a lawsuit.
the Bomber will go in.
I don't know. Some of those indie books where they barely even file the serial numbers off, you can get pretty close.
You can. And they've gone a lot. I mean, some of the, I'm trying to think who, like the Hulk could be fun, maybe, but there's not as big a supporting cast.
Pete is the Hulk, right? Isn't that Pete? Isn't Pete the big?
He's the bad guy.
Yeah.
So he would have to be the spy that fricks, that lets the, doesn't tell them the Banner's ran out onto the field. But they like to stick the big guys in there, and that's why I'd like to see, I don't know, maybe some of the more obscure Disney characters. Clarabelle the cow is
as Bofa or
yeah, or the X-Men. I mean, they could.
Oh, we haven't seen that yet. It. That's got to be coming.
And then they could do the, you know, the giant size of the new X-Men team.
Yeah,
mix them all up.
Yeah, you would do giant size.
I would start with the original. I think it would, they'd look funny in those kind of outfits, and it's been parodied a lot. And I think also it lets you have a deeper bench for the villains, because then you have the whole Brotherhood, and you get to pick a bunch of different ones and have, you know, some fun, silly fun with that.
Would you have an Uncle Scrooge Marvel type of thing?
Well, they already had the Infinity Dime or whatever.
Yeah, but I mean, where he's act like a Marvel character type of, like, you know, he's subbing in for.
I mean, you have to go with someone like Nick Fury or some kind of
Yeah, yeah.
Thing. to trade on that. Maybe he could be the Bloodstone, the guy, the Bloodstone father, and then one of the nephews or niece. I don't know if he has nieces, could be the Elsa Bloodstone and do that whole thing.
Disney didn't have enough characters, is their problem. I read a book where they looked back too and tried to be old school, but old school to the 90s. And that was Rogue the Savage Land, number one four. Written by Tim Seeley with art by Zaluma Scotto Lavina. With that, Akari Andrews.
Will never die.
Yeah.
I saw that in the store, Steve. Tell me why I made a mistake not picking it up.
Well, what's fun is it takes place back in the day. So they expand on that one or two issues that were so good they kept the Savage Land Rogue concept alive in the art collection commission world for decades since. You've got Savage Land fun. It's Savage Land like you remember it. Tazar's there. Zabu's there. Even Zaladane is there. And Magneto's there.
Is Garrock there? Or
no, he...
The guy with the big head?
So, Steve, you're saying it was the great story is why that outfit kept being...
No, the art, I gotta admit, the art is, the storytelling is decent, but it's, the art isn't particularly splashy. It's, you know, some of these books are getting close to, like, this could be a Dynamite book. And that's starting to bother me. But, you know, the Kari Andrews cover is really nice. And there is enough there that the adequate storytelling is still telling a good story. Tim Seeley knows what he's doing. So I found it to be a fun read. Wasn't anything fantastically great. It wasn't the Kari Andrews art all throughout, but it was a good enough read. It wasn't an overly sexy book or anything like that, even though the concept is... is Savage Land Rogue, but they weren't doing gratuitous shots or poses or anything. It wasn't pin-up-y.
Yeah.
There was if Kevin did the stopwatch test on it, he would be happy because there was a lot of reading to do there because they're going through the whole thing of Zaladane and the whole thing of the fact that Rogue had that weird confrontation with Ms. Marvel just beforehand and all that. So there's a lot going on in this time in Rogue's life. And that two-issue Savage Land thing happened really quick, and a lot happened. She gets to the Savage Land. She acclimates. She finds Magneto. She ends up having a relationship with Magneto. And then the story that they need to tell is all told in two issues, in those X-Men issues. So here, this first issue lets things breathe a little bit more about her, you know, experiencing what it's like to be in the Savage Land and on the run and some of the threats that are there. And it's more decompressed.
Okay. I passed cause I was worried it was going to be like a Marvel swimsuit issue or something.
Yeah. What if they had a cheesecake artist?
Because the cover was definitely evocative of some kind of like,
sure. I mean, just look at Kazar, but yeah, I would wait for the Unlimited on this. But I would definitely check it out.
All right. Well, I am still reading a book I mentioned the first issue of. I'm still on the West Coast Avengers tip.
Nice.
Oh, look at you.
Look at me reading the same title for more than two issues. So the story has, they've added Firestar, although I'm slightly concerned that they're just going to make her kind of a joke, which I hope not.
I have the same concern.
But other than that, I like that they've split out. Basically, Ultron decided to create a bunch of versions, but give them all kind of free will and no more hive mind. So they're all trying different approaches. And we have the one that's in the team that's trying to, his approach is to try and be of service to people. And then there's another Ultron there that's trying to help people by, if you're sick or terminally ill, he gives you a special Ultron body. And that's freaking out a lot of the Avengers because, you know, they're kind of control freaks. As we know in Under Doom, they don't really want people to get things they want. they're sort of like the babysitters to the world or whatever. And because all the people are like, I'm fine. You know, I chose this. I was dying and Ultron was the only one that could save me. But I'm enjoying, like I said, I always loved the silver and red Iron Man armor. Like I said, hoping Firestar isn't treated as a joke, but
yeah.
I think it's a fun lineup, barring that risk, and enjoying Ultron in like a new way. Because he was another one that can frequently just be like on 11 all the time and always monologuing and going off on squishy organic life and all that stuff, which is fine. I've enjoyed those stories, but it's nice to see the character taken in a different way. And what if we make him more cerebral and more kind of introspective about what life is and what his role is going to be?
Dude, but we are disgusting, though. You got to admit.
Yeah.
And then there was the time stuff. He was drunk.
So I'm enjoying it. I would give a thought. I'm still coming to grips, I guess, with how it looks. Like, I don't have any complaint about it, but it feels sometimes a little soft, for lack of a better description. But I guess that's just how it's going to be. I just feel with Iron Man and Ultrons and all that stuff, a bit more kind of mechanical look is the vibe I would go for. But, you know, hey, takes all kinds to make the world go by. I intend to keep buying. I have 3 issues. As long as I see it, I'll buy it.
All right.
Well, I got a weird one. One that I'm just about sure that you guys haven't read.
Really?
It's I really like the character Spider-Ham, Steve. Just warning.
This one is from last year, from 2024. It is a 12-page custom comic for the Dairy Federation of America. It's the Blue Bounder, #1. Written by Paul Allor with art by Lin Yoshi.
Do you have this in print, Steve, or is this a digi only?
This one was a digital find. This has Wyatt Hobart. He's an ordinary teen. He drinks a lot of milk. Does the body good, right? Then one day a meteor strikes just as he's drinking some milk, and he gets the powers. The speed, the strength. He pulls a daredevil and like saves a dude who's about to be hit by a truck. And boy, can he leap. So he takes out this bank robber supervillain type and designates himself the Blue Bounder. And then we get a couple of pages of milk facts and...
Oh, I thought it says you too can gain superpowers if you drink milk, but don't run in front of a truck.
Yeah, right.
Well, I was hoping he would get the proportional powers of a cow, Steve.
Moo, bang, your belt.
He's got the speed and agility of a cow.
So he's not going to be shooting things out of his body.
He's got
utterly disgraceful.
He's got a little milk mustache and like really bad breath.
All right. See, well, I got one very similar to that. I think I teased this, but I found a reader's copy when we were covering Doom 2099. You know how much I love getting lost in the ads. Well, I picked up X-Men and Captain Universe, the you can be personalized into a comic book. From the 90s.
Wow.
Now, I think a lot of this is I never did the mail away stuff or anything. So I'm always jealous, and I would totally do this now if Marvel did it. But anyways, I went on and got, what's really weird is I have someone's copy. I have Bernie Oswald's copy. So he's the one.
Wow. So the gimmick even last names.
They put your name in, and they actually do it in a couple different spots. So what it is it's a story with Bob Budiansky, Jim Craig, Dan McConnell, Ken Lopez, and Jim Hostin. And so it's a X-Men story. You guys probably remember Captain Universe as the hero that could be you. So yep. What happens is literally you, in this case, Bernie Oswald. What's great is in the text, they just leave it like a whole line. And because his name is pretty short, you can see where it is because it fits in. There are also these weird print artifacts on the side that have like a number on it. And I don't know if that has to do with how they sorted these so that Bernie got his and someone else got theirs, but it's in a few different spots. So they didn't just have it like on the first page or the title and that's it. They do put it throughout, but Bernie as Captain Universe teams up with them. And I really wish they would put this stuff on the Unlimited. And they also have Bernie Oswald. They put his name in the ads. Like, oh, if you wow. like the X-Men, you can have that. So, and then the character thanks him at the, you know, Gambit and Wolverine. The other thing that's so cool, guys, he got a personalized letter from Stan Lee and Professor X in this, the inside two covers. And those are two gentlemen that, you know, I would take a personalized letter from. Because I'm sure Stan wrote different letters, right? They didn't just insert his name. But there's so much fun silliness to all of this that it just really tickled me. The hard part is it's pretty expensive. So I had to search around for a reader copy. So it was like $20 or something, which is crazy for a, you know, it's a fine comic, but it's a total gimmick. But I just wanted one to kind of have one. But Marvel, if you're listening and you do this again, yeah, I would pay a bunch of money to have my name printed all over the comic. Kind of weird. Like they do that in Kickstarter and stuff, your images and stuff and everything. So.
I was thinking they only do that for retailers now, a personalized copy.
Yeah, so it's X-Men and Captain Universe is how it's going to be racked everywhere. I think part of the problem is it just, I'm sure, had a low print run, or maybe people just kept them in their collection. Because why wouldn't, you know, might think it doesn't have a lot of resale value. But I was tickled pink to get my hands on this. And I also got related, I think I also mentioned, I got the NFL Marvel magazine crossover, which is a lot of fun, and it has a little comic book insert. And again, I think that would be a problem, because in that one Spider-Man fights a holographic Howie Long in his Raiders outfit, Raiders uniform, so they have to pay the Raiders, they have to pay Howie, you know, some of that. I think the licensing would probably be more expensive to do a reprint than not, but I would just love a big omnibus of all these goofy crazy gimmicks they did over the years and have it in one spot, but license clearance would be hard. But X-Men, did either of you guys send in for this thing back in the day?
No. And you know what? You're right, Andrew, and it's so funny how much things have changed in this age of Amazon Prime, right? We're like used to getting things pretty quickly if we get them mailed. So much so that other companies that aren't Amazon Prime also manage to ship things pretty darn quickly because people have come to expect that, right? And back when we were kids and we didn't order stuff because 6 to 8 weeks seemed like a lot longer than six. Like we were conditioned to think that like stuff never came forever. You know, by the time they got the, you know, request and then did the processing and then did the mailing it to you, it was so long before something ever got to you that we were conditioned to, like, not want to order stuff. And now it's like, boom, we expect it the next day.
I didn't have a ton of cash, so the shipping and handling was actually a pretty big barrier to me. I was like, it's going to cost me twice as much to buy this thing because I got to pay them the $3.99 shipping and handling or whatever. So I think that was another barrier. And then I'd have to bug my mom for a check or get a money order, whatever the hell that was. You know, there seemed all these barriers to it being redeemed of the time, the hassle and all that. But in hindsight now, I'm gobbling all this crap up.
All right, the last one I've got is the penultimate issue of the current Namor limited series, issue 7 of 8. And it's the Jason Aaron, Paul Davidson, and Alex Lins series. It has taken me a while to connect with anything in this series. Some scenes have been good, but the overall really has been fractured with these like flashbacks to Namor's childhood and stuff that I find uninteresting and kind of flip through.
Well, Steve, the problem is you're a puny surface dweller. Yeah. And you can't.
In the last issue, Namor completed this like vision quest thing for Namor's trident and reclaimed it. And he's trying to stop seven armies, undersea armies, not like, you know, Burma's going to war or anything. Undersea armies are vying for control of the sea, as if it's one nation that Namor was, like as if Atlantis is every place under the water rather than just one place. So they want Namor's throne, and there's seven armies that he's trying to stop, so he's got the trident, and he decides that he's going to be the eighth army. And he throws himself into the mix and fights seven armies that are fighting each other. And it's crazy. He just keeps getting knocked down and gets back up and getting knocked down and gets back up. And we'll see where this is all going to finish and what kind of status quo it'll finish with. What I didn't like was this whole, maybe it's because I'm reading the old Submariner stories and Namor is getting his first glimpses and understanding of like Atlantis's past, and there Roy Thomas is establishing that in, you know, the Marvel universe, basically what they're going to have Atlantis's past be in history and all that stuff. And Namor's coming to those revelations. Well, now fast forward to this current series, Namor's having a, you know, the world is an cruel, unjust place kind of a moment where he learns that Neptune purposefully sank Atlantis to create followers because he wanted to have worshipers like some of the other gods did. And like, there's barely anyone even under the sea to worship me. What, like a snail and a clam and a whatever? We need people under there. So he sank the continent and made it so he could hang. It was a selfish act. So Namor feels really ticked off, and I don't know. That part of it I thought was pretty weak, even though it's supposed to be the strength of the story, I guess. But, you know, Namor's fighting, and he's got all swords stuck in him, and he's still fighting, and it's like Wolverine, but he's got no healing factor. So we'll see what happens in the last issue.
Well, for me, Steve, he'll always be stronger than a whale. all right, I've got a tale of two Andes or two comics. As you guys know, I am still overpaying for some Star Wars love. So I picked up Star Wars: A New Legacy, which is a big anthology book that costs, I don't know, $700 or something, and Legacy of Vader number one. So the first, A New Legacy, it's an anthology, three stories. You know, it's got all our favorite characters. They've really done a lot to bring back from the original series, Vance, the cyborg body hunter, plus Dr. Aphra's in it. She was a modern creation. And they're just kind of fun, goofy stories set in this interregnum period, and it has a bunch of stormtroopers also, like after the fall, and like a very gritty sort of story, the sort of Black Legion of them. And I don't know. It was a fun period. I liked it, even though it was so expensive. But the problem with the other one is it's a Kylo Ren comic. And it's well executed and everything. It's him coming to grips with his past. But I think just the character maybe just doesn't work for me.
Yeah.
Because there's nothing wrong with this comic or the story, but it just, I don't know, he's kind of petulant and whiny, but I'm like, that rings true to the movies too. Like, the I can't fault that against the source material. I mean, I like everybody does a good job. The book is, well, it's a Charles Soule, Luke Ross, Nolan Woodard. Like, it looks, the likenesses look like the characters, but not so much that you're lost in it. The action's well dictated. I think I just don't like the Kylo Ren's not interesting to me. And so it's just funny how two like the same, and Soul's involved with the other. Like, it's not like these are wildly different people working on them. It's just, for me, I think it's about finding maybe the eras that appeal to me more, which is kind of sad because I was kind of hoping. I don't know. I don't mind the sequels that much, but they don't really do much for me either. So I was hoping, oh, the comics will be a way to kind of get more into it. But I don't know. It isn't working for me, but maybe it'll work for one of you out there. So anyways, if you like kind of what they've created and what they're goofing on, Star Wars: A New Legacy, I can recommend. But the other one, I don't know. Yeah, I think you got to be more into Kylo Ren than I am.
You know, here's what's tricky. I have been on the Star Wars books, or at least the main Star Wars title and whatever the Darth Vader title is, since Marvel got the license back, right? And they started with stories after, you know, the first Star Wars movie, before Empire Strikes Back. And those were all fine, and maybe things started to drag a little right at the end before they did the transition, but they did the transition, and then all of a sudden they were telling stories after Empire, right? Before Return of the Jedi. And I thought things picked up rather good again, and there's some really good books in there. I recorded quite a few segments talking about Star Wars books. What lost me was the droid war thing. That sprawled and got a little weird, and there were still some books that I was following, and there were still some good moments after that, but I thought that right again before the transition, things sort of were starting to falter for me, and I didn't really like the whole Battle of Jakku stuff. I just finished reading that, and I know
you're gonna say I have piles of that.
Yeah.
I should read those. I bought them.
I didn't really like what the art looked like in a lot of those books, too. Again, I thought that things were starting to look like Dynamite books to me. And I found myself flipping through them. And I guess I'll give them a chance to see if whatever the regular Star Wars and Darth Vader books get off the ground of what this post Return of the Jedi era is going to be like in the Marvel universe here. But I don't know. I'm sort of feeling like I'm not going to have any trouble dropping these books if I are more entertained by them sometime soon. And I'm doing this kind of across the line. I know we talked about this a little bit with the Coolometer episode, but I'm the X-Men books right now. There's not one of them that has really connected with me, and I feel like I got to put those down for a while and let them simmer. And the Spider-Man books I haven't been reading much of. I just started reading the new Venom book and went back and read that Al Ewing last Venom series, which I'll talk about on episode 450. But yeah, there's a few different books that I'm or lines of books that I'm just sort of altogether not really interested in right now.
I just feel like they chase trends a little bit too much. Like, I enjoyed that giant bounty hunter thing, and I read them all and had fun, but then that led to like the Red Dawn with a million issues and the Trial of Land, and it just felt like it's fun if you do it once, but I'm not. Like, you can't keep that kind of pace up. Like, part of what's fun is it's a change up to be like, oh, we're going to do something where it felt like they wanted to make that the kind of status quo. And I'm like, that doesn't work as well all the time. But that just feels like a Marvel thing. Like, hey, this worked. Let's do it till you're tired of it.
The problem is the high price point on the books, right? You can't justify having just a few average villain of the month issues to sort of just really solidify the status quo before you start changing things up again, you know?
Well, it's also the downside of their all-in strategy is it made me go all out. Like, I was like, well, I'm not buying every single, so I just stopped buying a bunch of them at one point because I was like, I would have kept on buying a few, but I was like, I felt tired, like a vent fatigue or whatever in Star Wars. This is ridiculous, but I mean, I guess they know it works for them.
All right. Speaking of fatigue, we got these recent reads off our chest. That's a good thing. Next episode, though, we've got a good one that we've got to go off to our corners and let our cut men work on us a little bit so we can come out swinging. We're going to cover the first appearance of each of Galactus's heralds from over the years as part of our march towards episode 450 here.
And I've been reading those What If Herald books, but I didn't want to talk about them here because I want people to get excited. But
don't get too confused on the What If stuff. Do we do the real Herald? Save those for the next recent reads. All right, thanks, Andrew. Thanks, Kevin. Until the effects of that old asbestos apartment catch up to Johnny Storm, make mine Marvel. Later.